Mr. Alex Yeo, next PQ, please.
Question 7, please.
Mr. Deputy Speaker, my response will address the questions raised by members in relation to MOE's comprehensive action review against bullying. May I seek your permission to answer oral questions 7 to 29, as well as written questions 41 to 49 on today's order paper?
Please proceed.
Thank you, sir. My response will also cover related oral and written parliamentary questions set down for today's and subsequent sittings. Sir, MOE, with the support of the Compass Council, completed the comprehensive action review against bullying and announced the recommendations on the 15th of April this year. These span 4 key areas and 9 measures, forming a comprehensive whole-of-society approach. Let me briefly outline the 4 areas. First, we will strengthen values education. Prevention must begin upstream. We will place greater emphasis on shaping students' character and social-emotional skills so that they not only know what is right, but understand why it matters. Our schools will also foster a pro-social peer culture where students look out for one another, be upstanders, stand together against hurtful behaviour, and support those who are affected. Second, we will strengthen the school culture and environment. Every school must be a safe, caring, and enabling environment where every student can learn and grow, where bullying and hurtful behaviour have no place. We will deepen a culture of kindness and respect and promote empathy and kindness. At the same time, we will take more proactive action through early identification, better reporting channels, timely intervention, and firm discipline for serious cases. Third, we will strengthen school capacity. We will provide our schools with additional resources to procure additional manpower and services where needed to support our teachers in student management processes. We will also enhance professional development for our educators and tap on technology to improve case management and facilitate timely communication and intervention when incidents happen. Finally, we will strengthen partnerships with parents, families, and the community because bullying and hurtful behaviour cannot be seen purely in the school context alone, but must be seen in the context of what happens at home, in the community, and in society. Parents and families can reinforce positive values and character at home and partner our schools to support their children's development and well-being. We will also work with community partners to promote mutual kindness and respect across all sectors of society. Members asked about the methodology and findings of the review. MOE looked at research and drew on resources from local and international experts and sources. These included mental health professionals, developmental and educational psychology researchers, sociology researchers, and professional mediators. As part of the review, we also engaged various stakeholders, including professionals such as researchers, counsellors and psychologists, as well as school leaders, school staff, parents and students. We engaged or received feedback from over 2,000 stakeholders in total. There was broad agreement that addressing bullying holistically requires a collective, sustained response involving our schools, our families, and the wider community. Now, members have asked a wide range of questions relating to specific areas and recommendations of the review. I will address these questions by focus areas. Let me start with values education. A key goal of our education system is to develop character and social-emotional skills. As I shared in this House last September, the CCE curriculum, or Character and Citizenship Education curriculum, already covers these areas, including respectful behaviour online and offline. CCE equips our students to disagree appropriately, cope with negative behaviour, and overcome challenges. Schools also have peer support systems where students learn to support and stand up for one another. Following the review, we have strengthened our CCE lessons with more interactive learning strategies and real-life scenarios. This better equips our students to respond when they witness or experience bullying and other hurtful behaviour. We have also updated cyber wellness lessons to better address evolving online risks. These changes strengthen students' character and well-being whilst creating a more caring and supportive school environment. Many members have also asked about our school's disciplinary measures arising from the review. Our school's approach to bullying and other forms of student misconduct is fundamentally an educative process. Schools follow a structured process to ensure students' safety and well-being while addressing root causes in a timely and consistent manner. This includes making a police report for cases which warrant police attention. Throughout this process, our schools work closely with parents, keeping them informed, collaborating on safety measures, and prioritising the well-being of the students involved. When incidents are reported, schools investigate before deciding on the appropriate disciplinary and restorative actions. Actions are tiered based on severity, from reflection and detention to suspension or caning for egregious or repeated serious offences. Disciplinary measures are always complemented with counselling and restorative actions with the aim of helping our students learn, change their behaviour and repair damaged relationships. Safety plans for affected students can include separating the students, removing hurtful online content and arranging for peer support. Where affected students require additional support to manage their emotions, they may be referred to school counsellors, SEN officers, that is special education needs officers, or to the REACH teams, response, early intervention and assessment in community mental health teams, for more specialised support, particularly when persistent distress is identified. We recognise the need for greater consistency in the management of bullying across our schools. MOE has provided our schools with clearer guidelines on establishing offence management processes and disciplinary measures. As circumstances differ for each case, our schools will assess and take appropriate action aligned to these guidelines. All schools will also develop an anti-bullying policy by the end of this year that is based on MOE's guidelines. To ensure case management processes remain calibrated across all our schools, MOE will conduct regular focus group discussions, school engagements, and reviews. Our cluster superintendents, who oversee a group of schools, will provide further guidance and support to schools on the implementation of these processes. Another important aspect pointed out by members is parent engagement. When a case is reported to the school, the schools will maintain timely communication with parents, keeping them informed and partnering them to ensure the safety and well-being of their child. However, schools will require time to look into the incident and establish facts. The time taken will vary based on the complexity of the situation. Nonetheless, when an incident is reported, schools will prioritise immediate safety measures for all students involved. In some cases, students may not report incidents to the school, but may share them with their family or friends instead. In such situations, we encourage parents to report the incident to the school and work with the school to support their child. Should parents have concerns about how an incident is being managed, they should share their concerns with the school to better understand the school's approach and work with the school to resolve these concerns. Beyond that, parents can also provide feedback through MOE's online as well as offline feedback channels. Some members asked about caning as a disciplinary measure. Now, this is not a new measure. It's been around for quite a long time. Studies show that poorly administered and frequent corporal punishment, particularly in unregulated settings, such as at home, is associated with negative outcomes. We recognise this. And I want to emphasise that the context in our schools is quite different. Our schools use caning as a disciplinary measure if all the other measures are inadequate, given the gravity of the misconduct. They follow strict protocols to ensure safety for the student. For instance, caning must be approved by the principal and administered only by authorized teachers. Schools will consider factors such as the maturity of the student and if caning will help the student learn from his mistake and understand the gravity of what he's done or he has done. In MOE's framework, schools exercise discretion on whether to use caning as a disciplinary consequence after assessing the circumstances of the offence committed. If it is used, it is never administered in isolation, but always as part of a suite of restorative and disciplinary measures. Schools will monitor the student's well-being and progress after caning and counsel the student to reflect and learn while supporting the student's rehabilitation. Importantly, this approach is part of a framework of disciplinary measures which provides certainty of consequences, even as we support the student who committed the misconduct to learn from the experience. This approach is based on research which shows that children and youth learn to make better choices when there are clear boundaries enforced by firm, meaningful consequences. This has a positive impact on reducing bullying and enables the school community to feel safe to learn in an orderly environment. Caning is meted out for boys only, and as I said earlier, only for egregious violations. This is aligned to the education school's regulations, which only allows caning for male students. This takes reference from the Criminal Procedure Code, which states that women shall not be punished with caning. Nonetheless, this does not mean that girls who bully or engage in hurtful behaviour are less culpable. Our teachers and schools adopt a tiered approach to discipline that ensures that all students face consequences corresponding to the severity of their actions. Girls could receive consequences, for instance, such as detention and/or suspension, adjustment of their conduct grade, and other school-based consequences. MOE regularly reviews our discipline guidelines to ensure that our disciplinary measures remain appropriate. We will continue to receive feedback and refine our approach based on ground wisdom and research. I will now address the questions on reporting channels. I shared in this House last September about the various reporting channels available in our schools. The review reinforced the importance of providing safe and accessible platforms for reporting students' well-being concerns. From 2027, each school will have an online reporting platform available for students and parents. A school-based platform ensures that the platform is age-appropriate, accessible, and familiar for students and parents to use. Schools will be provided with guidelines on managing reports received through the different reporting channels. However, urgent cases should still be reported directly to teachers and school leaders rather than through the online reporting platform so that prompt action can be taken. Some members have expressed concern on cyber incidents. MOE recognises the seriousness of cyber incidents ranging from online harassment to obscene and inappropriate images that may be AI-generated. MOE will continue to provide schools with guidance on managing all cyber-related incidents, including fact-finding processes and supporting students in reporting online harms. When the Online Safety Commission, or OSC, becomes operational by the end of next month, June 2026, victims of certain online harms, such as online harassment, doxing, and intimate image abuse, will be able to seek more timely assistance. Our schools will support the well-being of students who encounter negative cyber incidents and guide them to report to the OSC. Now, questions were also raised by members about incidents involving students with SEN, or special educational needs, or mental health conditions. While schools uphold disciplinary standards, our schools also take into consideration each student's specific needs and circumstances. For students with special educational needs or mental health conditions who have been hurt, schools will first address the immediate safety concerns. Trained school personnel will also look out for signs of distress that may not be immediately visible or explicitly communicated and provide timely and appropriate support. The broader intent is always to enable affected students to regain their confidence and restore their sense of safety and well-being. For students with SEN or mental health conditions who have hurt others, it is especially important to help them understand that such hurtful behaviour may affect others negatively. The consequences are educative, restorative, and focused on helping the student learn and behave appropriately. Members have also raised concerns about the impact of these recommendations on our staff workload. Our intent is to go upstream to reduce the incidence of bullying and hurtful behaviour while strengthening and streamlining current practices. In the near term, of course, workload may increase as our schools implement these changes. MOE will therefore provide funding for our schools on a needs basis to hire additional manpower or services to provide support while managing teacher workload. This manpower could include youth workers, restorative practitioners, pastoral care officers, or parent liaison officers. MOE will also bolster support for our school counsellors when managing complex cases. Over time, as processes and norms become clearer, workload ought to stabilise. And if the measures succeed in reducing bullying upstream, then the overall burden on our school staff ought to ease. To streamline case management, MOE is also exploring technological solutions to help reduce the administrative load. For a start, MOE is developing an offence management system to support case investigation, documentation, and monitoring. We received suggestions for MOE to set up a centralised anti-bullying unit to support our schools in managing egregious cases. We considered this carefully. Our schools are best placed to manage such cases, and MOE HQ will support our schools. Our teachers know their students well and understand the dynamics of their school community. Where additional expertise and support is needed in specific areas or to deal with complex cases, our schools can tap on the needs-based funding to hire additional manpower or seek support and advice from their respective cluster superintendents. On community partners, MOE recognises that the cultivation of values such as kindness, empathy and respect in our children requires efforts well beyond the school environment. We are grateful for community partners who share this commitment. For example, SKM or the Singapore Kindness Movement partner schools through programmes such as Friends of Singa, Kindsville Initiatives and Kindness Day SG, which encourage students to lead kindness initiatives. The Centre for Fathering works with fathers to strengthen family bonds so that children feel secure turning to their parents when they face difficulties. We encourage community partners to share their expertise and initiatives as part of this society-wide effort against bullying. Members have also asked about data, outcome indicators, and measures of effectiveness. First, we will keep track of the implementation of these recommendations through regular engagements with educators and parents, as well as focus group discussions. Second, we will continue to watch student management outcomes. In terms of data on bullying incidents as a baseline, bullying incidents in the last 5 years averaged 3 incidents per 1,000 in our primary school students and 8 per 1,000 secondary school students per year. We will study these outcomes and trends and review if more needs to be done. We thank members for their interest in this issue. While schools play a central role in creating a safe, caring, and enabling environment for our students and teachers, addressing hurtful behaviour and bullying takes a whole-of-society effort. MOE will work with our schools, families, and the wider community to create environments where every child feels safe, valued, and supported to reach their full potential.
Mr. Alex Yeo.
Sir, I thank the Minister for his responses. I have two SQs. The first one, if the assessment is made that the affected students of a bullying case is not suited to remain in the same living learning environment or should be separated, either in the same class or school. What are the measures the school would take to ensure that the final outcome is fair, equitable, and in the best interest of all the affected students? Second, I just wanted to clarify my PQ9 on cyberbullying. Actually, what I wanted to seek clarification is that on the instances of cyberbullying, unlike the Australian Online Safety Act, which differentiates between cyberbullying material targeted at a child and cyber abuse targeted at an adult, our equivalent doesn't have that. And while I agree that the Online Safety Commissioner will be a good platform for parents, students, and even schools to refer in such instances to, the thresholds may not be the same. What may constitute as bullying, cyberbullying to children, any online harms to adults may not be the same. And if the Online Commissioner is not in a position to intervene, then how would the schools deal with such cyberbullying cases? Thank you.
Minister Desmond Lee.
I thank the member for his questions. On this first question, if a parent feels strongly that the child needs to change seating, change class, change school, please work closely with our schools. And if needed, they will activate MOE to look at the specific circumstances and see what immediate safety plans need to be put in place and what longer-term arrangements need to be made. On the member's second question, I believe the OSC will take also a child-centred approach to understand cyber incidents, cyber bullying, cyber harassment, not just in relation to adults, but also for children. And as I said, we will work closely with parents, with schools, as well as the OSC when the such incidents arise.
Mr. Xie Yao Chen.
Thank you, sir. So Minister mentioned the incidence rate of bullying behaviour in our schools, and I'd like to stress that this is based on reported incidences. So my questions to the Minister are, number one, does MOE and Minister foresee that there will be an increase in reported incidences and therefore the rate of bullying behaviour in our schools given the measures to roll out improved reporting and easier reporting of bullying behaviour? And number two, given this backdrop, would bringing down the rate of bullying incidents in our schools be a meaningful measure of effectiveness in MOE's view? Thank you.
Minister Desmond Lee.
I would say the data that we've provided, as the member pointed out, is based on what is reported. And so there are, when you look at this data, we're mindful that it can be over-reporting and under-reporting. Over-reporting in the sense that from the child's perspective, they feel that they've been hurt. But again, it depends on their personal threshold and what we feel requires intervention. So there might be some over-reporting, but there certainly may be under-reporting. A child decides not to report for various reasons or tells friends and parents and the matter is not raised to the school attention or is not picked up by our schools. So we look at this data, but we also need to make sure that in every school, our school leaders are on top of the situation and are mindful of what's happening in the classrooms and outside the classrooms. So when we put in these measures, when there's greater awareness across the board, across society, among parents, among students, among peer support leaders, among educators, one could well expect that with that greater awareness and willingness to speak up and address this issue, more are reported. Not to mention that from next year, all schools should have online reporting platforms to supplement the face-to-face reporting to school leaders, peer support leaders, as well as teachers. As to whether or not bringing the numbers down should be a meaningful KPI, obviously it's something that we want to watch, but it requires not just a downstream intervention and measures, but a lot of the work has to be upstream. It has to be about culture building. It's about the child and his or her understanding of how to relate to one another. And it also involves taking care of children with special needs or mental health challenges who may have challenges behaving in norms that we would otherwise expect. So we have to be inclusive in that regard as well.
Mr. Abdul Muhaimin.
Thank you, Deputy Speaker. MOE has stated that the standardization aims to ensure common baseline with while schools retain discretion based on individual circumstances. I have two supplementary questions for this. How does the ministry ensure that the discretion retained by individual schools does not result in significant disparities in how caning is administered, for instance, between schools that have well-resourced student development teams and those that do not? My second SQ, what oversight or audit mechanism exists to review whether mitigating factors such as special educational needs and mental well-being are in fact being properly assessed before caning is administered? Thank you.
Minister Desmond Lee.
I want to thank the member for his two good questions. The first is that perennial tussle or balance that has to be struck, not just in our schools, but in society as a whole, between ensuring consistency and standardization versus giving safety valves, versus giving discretion for our schools and for figures of authority to assess each case on its circumstances and on its merits. And certainly in the context of a school which is fundamentally an educational institution, not just cognitively, but also social-emotionally in terms of values, we want to look at the children concerned as well, look at whether they have special needs, mental health challenges, whether they have challenges at home, or whether they're under peer pressure, and so on and so forth. And so it's always that balance between consistency and fairness, that principle, versus providing discretion to ensure that discipline ultimately has education and as its core goal. And so our schools have been given clearer guidelines, some benchmarks to look at for different kinds of offences. Necessarily, there will need to be discretion. Facts will differ, gravity of the acts will differ, and therefore, they will exercise discretion, but with our cluster arrangements and with more frequent sharing and conferencing amongst each other, we will be able to take a look and make sure that on a whole we address fairness while ensuring that each case is dealt with appropriately on its merits. The other question the member raised is on oversight, whether a child has those needs like education needs or mental health. Our schools have got, our teachers and our form teachers will know their children, will know their students. All right? We will have SEN officers in schools, we have counselors, we have school welfare officers, and we have access to REACH teams, as well as external social, as well as health and mental health providers in the community, so that we ensure proper oversight when administering any form of discipline or any form of rehabilitative and corrective measures for our children.
Mr. Darrell David.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just two supplementary questions for Minister. Minister mentioned earlier about the revamping of the CCE. I would like to ask Minister that are there specific strategies or techniques taught to students, either within CCE or in other aspect of the school in terms of self-regulation, how to manage their emotions and so on, that might help them with their own behaviour management. Second SQ is, Minister talked about connecting with other agencies. Oftentimes I found that students who are involved in acts of bullying, they themselves perhaps are dealing with issues in their home space with their families. They could perhaps be themselves the victims of being bullied. Does the MOE or the schools, therefore, work with other agencies, be it MSF, to find out how they can help these students who commit acts of bullying, if they are indeed also victims of bullying themselves?
Minister Desmond Lee.
Mr. Deputy Speaker, on the first question on CCE, during our engagement sessions, one which I attended, parents spoke about whether we could look at more recent incidents in a school, and after the passing of a certain amount of time, use those relatively fresh experiences in the school to make the CCE lesson come alive, because it's very real, it's not hypothetical. It's not anonymized from some other place. We looked at that and we felt that there was merit in that suggestion by parents, some parents, and therefore we have enhanced CCE so that there is role-playing, there are more realistic scenarios, and allow the children to take on different roles in order for them to do better perspective-taking and strengthen their sense of empathy and allow them to not just experience the emotions, but also what it is to be an upstander and what it is to seek help if you're playing the role of the victim, or if you are, you know, a student, to be able to understand, you know, what kinds of words hurt, what kind of actions cut. And so that is how our CCE is being expanded. Of course, there are other aspects of CCE and other curriculum throughout the whole school year where we teach students about cyber wellness, cyber well-being. And in learning about these technologies, they also learn how to use it appropriately and interacting with one another. Your other members' other point about families who face complex challenges at home that may manifest in terms of the child's behaviour, whether it's parentified behaviour, whether it is permissive parenting, whether it is a negative influence in the community or in the neighbourhood. This is something which our teachers will be more in touch with our students on. That is why the home-school partnership is so important. And that is why our partnerships with family service centres, with SSOs, as well as mental health agencies in the community is so important.
Deputy Leader.
Deputy Speaker, may I seek your consent and general assent of members present to move that the question time at this day's sitting be exempted from Standing Order Number 22.1 so as to enable questions for oral answer to continue until the completion of questions numbered 7 to 29, including relevant supplementary questions until 12:45 p.m.
I give my consent. Does the Leader have the general assent of honourable members present to so move? Deputy Leader, please proceed.
Deputy Speaker, I move that notwithstanding Standing Order Number 22.1, question time at this day's sitting continue until the completion of question number 7 to 29, including supplementary questions, until 12:45 p.m.
The question is as moved by the Leader of the House. Those who agree say aye.
Aye.
Those who disagree say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Order. Question for oral answer to be continued. Mr. Yip Hon Weng.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Speaker. I thank the Minister for his response. Some parents have met me at my MPS about disputes with schools about how the teacher handles bullying cases when a kid is bullied. So when there are disagreements between schools and parents on the severity of a bullying case, will MOE consider establishing a clearly defined independent escalation pathway? And my second SQ is, with the introduction of an easier reporting channel, likely increasing volume, could the Ministry explain whether it is confident that serious cases will not be crowded out by less severe reports? Thank you.
Minister Desmond Lee.
On the member's first question, our teachers and our school leaders seek to investigate the facts, objectively try to address the incident, on the one hand support the affected child, and on the other making sure that the actor of the misconduct or alleged misconduct is dealt with appropriately. So not just disciplined, but also an opportunity to reflect and learn. And that is why his question emphasizes why the relationship between parents and school is so important. Because in a small number of cases, unfortunately, parents' concern for their child results in a certain level of acrimony, an adversarial approach taken by a parent of one child against the other child who is viewed as the perpetrator. And that can be very emotional. We fully understand parents' feelings and emotions when their child has been hurt or subject to hurtful behavior or bullied. And the parent, of course, would expect certain things to be done. But our schools and our teachers want to make sure that we address this fairly, even if firmly. And so we seek parents' support and understanding. And of course, our teachers will endeavor to do their best to build a positive relationship with not just the child, but also with their parents at home. So if there is a need to escalate the matter, then certainly the school leader and beyond that, the cluster superintendent and zonal director, these are people with experience who can be called upon through the MOE reporting channels to look into the matter. On the member's other question about how to ensure that minor cases don't crowd out more serious cases, certainly we want to make sure that we look at the serious cases, whilst not allowing minor incidents to then fester and become the shoots of more serious incidents. Because it's better to nip it in the bud. It's more important to take an upstream approach or midstream approach and see if there are concerning behaviours that need to be addressed early. So certainly, we don't want to crowd out the serious cases, but we must not ignore that small little matters can then blow up over time.
Dr. Charlene Chen.
Thank you, Deputy Speaker. I've met parents of victims of bullying cases at my MPS, and usually two underlying themes are what they're concerned with: transparency of process and accountability of perpetrators. I would like to ask, number one, does the Ministry facilitate formal apology protocols that provide closure for the victim? Number two, does the Ministry track whether victims continue to struggle after the case is closed and whether it sees the need to? And lastly, what extent will the recommendations from the Comprehensive Action Review be adapted for higher institutes of learning? Institutes of higher learning, and will IHLs be required to adopt a centralised reporting platform like the ones rolled out for the other schools? Thank you.
Minister Desmond Lee.
On the member's second question, I think this is beyond the remit of today's focus, which is on general education. And of course, I can give an answer, but our IHLs are autonomous, especially the autonomous universities. They have their disciplinary mechanisms and approaches. There is a certain strand that runs through all of them. But I think it will be beyond the limited time we have. So I urge the member to file another question, allow us to explain the approach in institutes of higher learning with regards to young adults. On her first question about transparency and accountability, she's right on that point, because that is a mark of whether the trust is upheld between home and school. That is something that we strive to upkeep with these latest series of enhancements to our framework. With regards to formal apologies, there are some schools which will facilitate, as part of restorative practice, an opportunity to bring the two children or two young people together, or more if the incident involves more people, to try to bring closure when they are ready, particularly the student who has been subject to the bullying or hurtful behaviour. Sometimes it's written, sometimes it's oral, but over time, as we work more closely with RP practitioners, restorative practice practitioners, we'll be able to refine and improve on this aspect of closure. Because ultimately, most of the time, the students will have to remain in a learning environment and then have to learn from what has happened. On the one hand, to curb bad behaviour, on the other, to strengthen one's resilience.
Ms. Sylvia Lim.
Thank you, sir. I have two supplementary questions for Minister. First, on what the Ministry has published on this matter, we read, of course, the recommendations being made about how to handle school bullying, but I was not able to find the fuller report or the findings on which the recommendations were based. So I'd like to ask Minister whether there's any concern about publishing more information about how MOE arrived at those recommendations, meaning, for example, what he mentioned, the literature consulted, you know, the what are findings from various focus groups, etc. So that's the first question. Second question is related to my PQ, actually, 25, which was on cyber incidents. I didn't hear him answer whether there has been an increasing incidence of creating and circulating AI-generated fake obscene images between fellow students. So has there been an increase noticed? And on this point, I wanted to know what the schools could do if the perpetrator is not known. I mean, how are they supposed to handle such incidents? Because obviously their powers of investigation might be limited.
Minister Desmond Lee.
On the member's first question, let me discuss with my colleagues what additional material might be useful for our schools as well as for the public to understand in terms of the basis for various recommendations. On her second question about AI-generated fake obscene videos, I think I mentioned it in my reply, that MOE will work closely with our schools to address these issues. I did a check. Such technology is relatively recent, all right, over the last few years, and therefore, these new actions would involve an increase from zero to a certain number. The numbers still remain small, but we are keeping a very close eye on it. And with the formation of the OSC from next month, we'll work closely with them to help our students and help parents tackle such incidents as they arise. Of course, to the extent that perpetrators are students, the culture building, the establishment of norms, the education on cyber wellness and how to use these powerful tools ethically and appropriately and legally will be very important. But to the extent that these incidents have occurred, I've mentioned that we will work with the families and the students, support them, but work with the authorities like the OSC to have them taken down. It's not an easy task because there could be proliferation around different platforms, so that work will have to be not just immediate, but follow through for some time yet. And the member asked, what if the perpetrator is not known, because these are people hiding behind technological tools? Then we may need to work with not just the OSC, but with the police. And one may recall an unfortunate incident in 2024 where some secondary school students created AI-generated deepfakes of female students, obscene nudes. And they were identified and they were dealt with firmly, not just through police investigation, but also by school disciplinary action.
We've been on 7 to 29 in terms of PQ for close to 40 minutes. We've extended PQ time by 15 minutes. So I request SQs to be short, and if Minister can give brief answers there too. We have 5 minutes more. Mr. Melvin Yong.
Thank you, sir. I have three questions on the balance between punishment and rehabilitation. One, how will schools be guided to balance disciplinary action with counselling and restorative practices? I think Minister mentioned here. Whether MOE will track recidivism rates to assess if these rehabilitation efforts are effective. On cyberbullying, will MOE consider working with agencies like IMDA and the social media platforms to enable faster takedown of harmful content?
Minister Desmond Lee.
Answer to one is that we, as I said, discipline, whether it's corrective, punitive, ultimately it has to be educative in nature. So disciplinary measures are always followed through with reflection, with counselling, and so on and so forth. On your second question, answer is yes.
Ms. Herting Roo.
Thank you, sir. I would like to ask the Minister for further colour about the longitudinal tracking of the, you know, bullying incidents, both in terms of, in my PQ, both in terms of perpetrators and, you know, how does the ministry actually check that, track that, and also in terms of the actual victims of the bullying incidents. So how do you track how, you know, for example, the interventions taken, the punishments given, the disciplinary measures taken, how does the ministry, and whether the ministry and how does the ministry track on the actual victims of the bullying incidents as well? Thank you.
I thank the member for two questions. On the longitudinal tracking of victims and alleged perpetrators, the school will have very close proximity with the students concerned. They will have a sense of whether a child learns from his or her mistake after the disciplinary and corrective and educative steps are put in place, and observe the child for the duration of his or her time in school. We will see how best to track this on the longer term to look at overall recidivism rates. With regards to victims as well, particularly if the student has been the victim of a serious incident of bullying, counsellors will keep an eye. They work closely with not just the child concerned, but also with the families as well.
A last SQ, Mr. David Ho.
Thank you, Deputy Speaker. I thank the Minister for the comprehensive response. My question comes from concerns from parents, three SQ specifically. First, on disciplinary action, what guidance are given to school in deciding when it should be an in-school suspension and when it should be an out-of-school suspension? The second question, for out-of-school suspension, how does the Ministry ensure that there will be avenues for guided reflection during the time of out-of-school suspension, so that this would be able to achieve the objective, which is supposed to be educative in nature? Lastly, given that students may fear retaliation or social repercussion, what measures are there to protect students and assurance given to them that they will be protected after making a report?
Minister Desmond Lee.
On the member's first question, I recall in September we also had this discussion. When a child or student has to be suspended, part of it could be as a safety planning arrangement to have the perpetrator removed from the class or from the school. Part of it could be punitive in nature to say, well, you know, because of this behavior, after investigation, you are suspended from coming to school to learn. But as a member rightly pointed out, for some students, they may not perceive that as being punitive. They don't feel that they're being deprived of something and don't feel that these are worthwhile consequences that cause them to want to behave better. And therefore, there's also in-school suspension. And school teachers, form teachers, school leaders will know their students' background well and know how to position the application of these disciplinary measures in a way that reinforces that there are consequences for serious misconduct. On fear of retaliation, there are therefore a whole range of school measures from peer support leaders being brought in addition to, of course, school arrangements by staff to look after students who stand up or who report incidents that happen to them. And of course, there are consequences if retaliation then leads to offences that are investigated. Thank you.